Dan, following the time that we recorded the World's Greatest Podcast, some interesting news came down on Louisville basketball, and basically they were stripped of their NCAA tournament championship. They were stripped of all wins between 2011-12 and 2014-15. That's 108 regular season victories, 15 NCAA tournament victories, a 2012 Final Four appearance, and a 2013 national championship. A 4 years probation. They're going to have to give back the money from that they received from the league over that time period, and a $5,000 fine, which is kind of interesting. What is your take on them vacating a championship they won?
Well, I have two thoughts. One, if you're going to have rules, and you got to have penalties that deter the rules. Number two, it seems a little bit, just a little bit, kind of like, it's hard to say it didn't happen because we all saw it happen. It's hard to say that, you know, what are you going to do, go get rings back from kids, say Michigan's the champ? I don't think you can do that. I'm just, the whole affair kind of sickens me that, you know, if you really go back through it, you've got, you know, prostitutes in dorm rooms. You've got all kind of payments to kids. You just have such a timeline of Louisville that, you know, I'm glad they're punished if they deserve to be punished, if the Committee on Infractions. But, you know, vacating wins and saying things didn't happen seems a little bit silly to me. But I will say this. I don't think Louisville understands. Like, the president came out and said, well, you know what, they can take this down, but they're always in our hearts. And that's great. I mean, if that's how you feel. But the truth of the matter is, Louisville, I'm sure the Committee on Infractions isn't the NCAA. The Committee on Infractions is made up of individuals that are like chancellors, vice chancellors, former coach, one from the public, deans, things of that nature. So this is their peers that are punishing them. This isn't some, you know, we always blame everything on Mark Emmert and the NCAA. This isn't that. This is, hey, these are people who volunteer their time to be, get on a committee of infractions that are peers at Louisville that decided this is the appropriate penalty. So if you want to blame anybody, blame Louisville. Blame Rick Pitino. That was established there by Tom Jurich and the people at Louisville. Louisville people shouldn't blame anybody but themselves because this was handed down by their peers, not like 10 guys in dark suits waving around NCAA badges. Look up who was on that committee, and you'll see it's people that are peers of Louisville, and they should pretty much just shut up and take it.
Yeah, here's, you know, my take is, look, what happened is undefensible. I mean, if you think about it, it's hard to fathom that happening and the way it happened, and for it to go undetected for that long a period of time, considering the number of different people that are involved in those type of things that could, you know, over the course of years that no one said anything to anyone. But I kind of agree with you and I guess the president. I think that the games were played. There's no denying the games were played. And I'm not sure that benefit had any impact on Louisville getting a player or winning a game or anything else. You know, I think that hit people in the pocketbook. I'm not sure taking away a championship. Do the kids have to get back the rings? I mean, you know, the banners are obviously coming down, so no one will have a banner for that season. Yet the game was played. And, you know, when kids went to Louisville back then, you know, to me, the whole concept of Andre McGee, what he was doing, I mean, this is Louisville. This is the tradition of Louisville. This is Rick Pitino. This is Hall of Fame coach. This is playing in, you know, in this great conference. So, I mean, like, to me, I just have a hard time whether it's Jim Boeheim's games vacated or John Calipari's wins vacated. Once a game is played, it's played. There's a winner and a loser. And it's not like it never happened. It's not like it didn't exist. And, you know, I think they should hit Louisville in the pocketbook. I'm not sure they should punish every single kid that played on that team, that worked his tail off, that did a lot of good things and won a national championship, because I do not think the punishment fit the crime when it comes to that. Do I think the crime was egregious and hard to fathom? Yes. But I just have a hard time, you know, feeling that the punishment fit the crime.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that necessarily. I don't know if I agree with the punishment. You got to have punishment. you know, the fanboy media of Louisville are all saying that it's only $600,000. I'm hearing it's much more than that. Yeah, I guess. But really, you know, if players want to walk around and say that they won a championship, then great, they did. And the proof is on TV. But here's my bigger issue.
What was the impact of Michigan when it happened?
I don't think it took very long at all. I just think it took them a while to finally, you know, get Tommy Amaker and Beilein in there. I don't really think it impacted in terms of time. I think the one thing I'll say about Michigan, and I think this is great, is that Michigan had their problem. They appealed. They did all the things they're supposed to do. And then they pretty much just said, to heck with it, we're moving on. And whether or not, you know, Chris Webber ever wants to come back, or who cares? I mean, to me, I don't care if anybody that's ever been involved in nefarious things ever comes back to any university. But I just think that you got rules, you got coaches, you got apparently a culture, because if you go down the timeline, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of different things there with Rick Pitino. And eventually you just say enough. And I would say this, I mean, if you're going to talk about an institution of higher learning, if you're going to try not to have that facade, or if you're going to try to have that not be a facade, then in my opinion, where are the adults in the room? Where's the faculty? Where are people standing up and saying, hey, good. Where's the president, interim president, saying, you know what, we screwed up. This is never going to happen again. This is not who we want to be. All I've heard out of Louisville is excuses and whining about the NCAA. I haven't heard anybody just simply say, look, this should never happen at the University of Louisville. This should never happen on our campus. We're better than that. We need to be better than that. And
I agree with that. I think that, they've got to acknowledge what had happened, because it's been appealed and reappealed, and whether they agree with it or not.
I have not heard them acknowledge anything, Seth, and I live right here. All I've heard them do is complain about the process. Now, they fired Pitino, so there you go. But all I've ever heard them do is complain about the process, complain about the rules. Instead, I don't think I've ever heard one person say, hey, man, we screwed this up. And I'll give Michigan credit. Michigan took the banners down. You know, there's some very popular players in the media now that, you know, they do their whining as well. But I like that Michigan said, to heck with this. We're Michigan. We're above this. And Michigan has gone on, and Michigan has continued to be a great institution and a heck of a basketball program.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, all right, let me ask you this. Let's just spin it just quickly ahead. Rick Pitino, ever coach in college again?
I don't think he coaches in college again, because, Seth, let's be honest, tomorrow you're going to say, or today you're going to say, that Louisville, oh, yeah, that's the only school ever to give up a national championship banner. 50 years from now, hopefully you're saying Louisville's the only school to give up a national championship banner. Hey, it was the coach, Pitino. To say never would be stupid, because we all know athletic directors out there don't really care. They care about winning. Hell, Calvin Sampson's back coaching and doing a good job after two-time offender. I would think if Pitino wanted to coach, he would be in the pros.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. And I think it'll be interesting to see how these, you know, look, this doesn't impact anyone on the current team. So, I mean, you know, this is obviously in the rearview mirror. I think, you know, the big thing about this whole situation is that it does impact guys that went to Louisville for the right reasons, did the right thing, worked their tails off. But in the end, what the decision that was made and the choices that people that were hired by Rick Pitino, let's face it, you're accountable for the people that you surround yourself with, the decisions those guys made, everyone's accountable for. And then I think the other thing is just, to me, the whole thing, and it's hard to put your hands around it, you're talking about a four-year period. That must be the most clandestine group of people in the history of life to have that transpire for that long a period of time in a facility, you know, very close to the practice facility.
So are you assuming that it didn't happen then?
No, it's amazing to me that over that period of time that literally it took this woman coming out of the woodwork to bring it to light, which is, I mean,
maybe that speaks to the ridiculous culture and the fear that Jurich and Pitino had, and the power that they had that nobody would speak. Because clearly it happened. I mean, you had kids that have gone to the NCAA and documented that it happened. It's not a question of if it happened.
No doubt about that.
He said, she said.
I agree with that. But, you know, it's time to move forward. The battle comes down. Louisville will either, you know, keep their current coach, Coach Padgett, or they'll move on. And, you know, Louisville's still a good job. They've got great facilities. They've got a place that has a rich tradition. And it'll be interesting to see how they rebuild their, you know, their program.
You know what's really interesting, and this goes to your question, you know, we just saw this at Michigan State. When diligent media people get going and they do their job, it's amazing what can be uncovered. They're so afraid that this stuff could have been happening under their nose, but they were so taken in by Pitino. And it's so obvious the way this whole thing has reacted. It's really a little bit sickening how the Louisville media has reacted. I saw with two friends of mine, Kowski, how they didn't have a dog in the fight and uncovered, because USA Gymnastics was in Indianapolis, they uncovered all the terrible things that Larry Nassar was doing. That's what a media is supposed to do. A media is not supposed to be fanboys. So, you know what? Who knows what people in the media in Louisville knew and were too afraid of Pitino, or too afraid of Jurich, or too afraid of what the fans of Louisville and how they were going to react. So, it's not the same crime, obviously, but it does speak to media and their diligence. So, you know, we'll see moving forward what happens with Louisville. But, you know, right now they're the only school ever to have a championship banner taken down.
Yeah. For people listening to this, Dan and I are both obviously in transit, so we apologize for the quality of this conversation, but we thought it was important to address it in a timely manner, and campus will have some comment on it at some point on their podcast tomorrow. But, Dan, safe travels. Get to today's podcast with Coach Musselman, Coach Marshall, and our circle of trust.
For the win! Yeah! Yeah!
At the buzzer, they poured on its way!
Timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the world's greatest podcast. Not even just the world's greatest basketball podcast, just like it's the world's greatest podcast, because we bring so many different things into the equation. I mean, we bring Dan's travel schedule. Like, Dan has a tough travel schedule this week. I mean, you know, he's got a big-time game for his boy Junior, and then he's got a game at Maryland. And before we get into anything, if you're listening to this podcast and you own a plane and you understand the dad that Dan Dokic is, you should call us up and find a way to fly him from – who does Ohio State play, Coach?
Look, I'll pay, too. They play in Bloomington, and there's a Bloomington airport, since we're shilling here. The game is 7-9. At 9:15, I could be at the Bloomington airport, ready to fly to College Park, Maryland. It's a one-way flight. I'll pay. The $8,000 that somebody quoted me was a little steep for my taste. I think I'll just drive if but I will be in Bloomington.
I cannot believe someone in America would want to help you be the dad of the year.
I know, right?
Speaking of dad of the year, Ohio State.
Yep.
Took it on the chin at Michigan. And, you know, Ohio State, we all think they're a very good team. Maybe not a Final Four team, but Chris Holtmann's done a great job. But how was it for your boy Junior rolling back into Chrysler Arena for the first time wearing the crimson and gray? Is that what it is?
Scarlet and gray.
Scarlet and gray.
It was great. I mean, you know what? I told him after, I said, man, you went from a walk-on that nobody knew about to the whole crowd giving you so much respect, they felt the need to boo you every time you touched the ball. And he said, well, Dad, it might have more to do with me coming from Michigan and going to Ohio. I said, no, that's not what it was. It was the respect that the crowd. Hey, One thing, like they were a little vile at Michigan. They said the word starts with the F, ends with a K, and it's not fire truck. A lot. And I was sitting because the parents sit right next, and some dude literally sitting right across the aisle from me says, at the end of the game, blank you, Dockage. And then like for a split second, he realized that I'm sitting next to him, right?
Kinder, gentler you, though.
Much kinder, gentler. And I looked at him, and I swear to God, I thought he was going to cry. He slid over. And, you know, in general, people were great. I wish Ohio State had played better, but you got to give Michigan a lot of credit. Michigan has a tough one. They've got Penn State. But, yeah, it was great. It was absolutely great. It was fun to be there, and too bad it didn't go the way, you know, Andrew would have liked. But, hey, that's life. Move on. Let's go. Next game.
All right. So, circle of trust. When you think of Ohio State, you think of Michigan. Like, to me, Michigan's in my circle of trust right now. I think they're potentially an Elite Eight team. They're defending better. They've got a tough matchup with Mo Wagner. I see Xavier Simpson kind of having ownership in this team at the point some now. Charles Matthews gives them a little bit of a different identity. They're in my circle of trust as a potential Elite Eight team. Ohio State, either are they getting worn down? Are people figuring them out? They're struggling a little bit scoring it. What's your take?
I agree with both. I think that one of the things that when you're at the game and you're just, you know, you're kind of dissecting it as a fan, you realize how good John Beilein is. Beilein figured out quick this high ball screen, drive it from the right slot, and that's next game he might figure out something different. Yeah, I think they're very good, and I think that Xavier Simpson has really elevated his game. Ohio State, here's the deal with Ohio State teams, and I was talking to Andrew about this yesterday, you know, teams have decided we're going to get on top of you. We're going to get on top of Kade Bates Diop. We're going to pressure C.J. Jackson and Andrew. We're going to get into you. We're going to be physical with you. It's kind of started with Penn State a few weeks ago. Not a lot of teams are capable of doing that. Penn State kind of is. I thought Michigan was. We'll see when they play Rutgers, but look, Ohio State has to move the basketball and find the next better than they have, or else this isn't going to change. And they know that, but I think they're very good. I think they have a chance to certainly be a second weekend team. Are they in my circle of trust? I'm going to say absolutely. Michigan is as well. There's not a lot of teams in the Dan Dockett circle of trust, but those the four Big Ten teams are, because I just like everything about them. Purdue went through a little slump. Ohio State's going through it right now.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about Purdue and then Michigan State. Like, Michigan State comes back from down 27. Oh. But, you know, like, we're trying to see, how does that happen? Well, look, Northwestern made some shots, made some plays early. But to me, coming back from down 27, people don't understand. There's a couple things. You know, is there any magic dust that's sprinkled on your team at halftime? You know, obviously, I'm sure Tom Izzo had a little heart-to-heart with the fellas. But it's all about getting stops after that and then getting a pretty good offensive possession and making some buckets. And the thing that impressed me most about their comeback was Miles Bridges didn't have double-figure points. Jaren Jackson didn't have a rebound. And yet they came back and won that game. And to me, when Cassius Winston's taking care of the basketball, Nick Ward was more productive. They've got more guys than most that can make a play, make a basket. They've got ridiculous front court depth. I mean, you know, it was a great win in terms of coming back, but it just shows you why, you know, they're in that circle of trust. And then with Purdue, think about the end of the game against Penn State. I mean, Klein makes a big shot. Dakota Mathias makes a big shot. Carson Edwards always is making big plays. But even without Vince Edwards to win that game against a really talented, skilled, guard-oriented, got a bunch of dudes that can make plays, that was a pretty impressive win as well.
Let me go two routes with you. All right, circle of trust. Now, Goodman and Mike DeCourcy and all the reporters turned analysts are...
Are they?
I don't know. They my man Bridges hit a jump shot from 28 feet, and all these guys are, hey, he's got game. Well, guess what? Since then, I think he's got three baskets, and here's why. teams figured out what Indiana did, and that's put a smaller guy on him. And if he's going to make jump shots, and what are you going to do? He's a jump shooter. And going to the rim, he's got to get better at that. And he does an offensive rebound. So let me ask you this relative to Michigan State and their circle of trust. Does it bother you that if you really break it down, other than Nick Ward, they're a jump shooting team? Does it bother you that they have gotten down big time? Not only, hey, look, not only against Northwestern, they're down 13 at half against Maryland, at Maryland. They're down double digits in the second half at home against Penn State. They had to go to overtime to beat Rutgers. Does it bother you in your circle of trust that it's a jump shooting team, that it is a team that has gotten down in game and down big in games? Does that bother you at all relative to the circle of trust?
Yeah, it bothers me, but yet they have enough resiliency.
And, they have enough defense. What I love about their defense is a
great,
mother.
It's great. And yep. Jaren Jackson's ability, like, here's the thing. Jaren Jackson stays out of foul trouble, and they're a different team.
I agree.
That's like, he gets in foul trouble.
But that's like saying if you and I had hair, we'd be handsome.
Well, I mean, you know, one of us is.
But I'm just saying, like, it's a big if because he always gets in foul trouble. Like, you know what I'm saying? So your circle of trust includes Jaren Jackson.
Yeah, I just think that as teams go in this year in college basketball, they've got more pieces than most.
I agree.
And now let me ask you this. Is Duke with Grayson Allen with the ball in his hands, and I'm not saying they're better without Marvin Bagley, although they only play with one post guy, so they have better space and the ball moves. Grayson Allen's more aggressive. Duval's playing basically the two so that they can advance pants and he can just put his head down and drive it. The zone's more active because you got more active guys on the wings. Is Duke in your circle of trust? And when Marvin Bagley comes back, are they better off in a lot of ways either figuring out with the two bigs we got to keep Grayson aggressive or playing one big at a time?
Well, here, let me answer the first. Duke is in my circle of trust. Duke is better without Marvin Bagley. And here's why. A few years ago, you know, remember Jabari Parker? I don't know what's happening. I think Jabari Parker's been hurt. But when Jabari Parker was at Duke, they were the worst defensive team I've ever seen. And he was the worst defensive player, not named Kyrie Irving, that I've ever seen for a good player. They were like a sieve. In fact, I talked to Coach K after the year, and he's like, yeah, guys were a sieve. Well, I think they're a sieve with Marvin Bagley. I do. And I think the rotation or the movement of one player in college basketball, in professional basketball, in high school basketball, shifts the dynamic so dramatically. I think they're better defensively. I think they get to the foul line better. I think they share the basketball better. And I think when you got a fifth-year guy and you give the keys to, like Grayson Allen, you're going to be far better than a freshman guy who may or may not be playing for the NBA. So I am all in on Duke sans Marvin Bagley. However, he is going to come back. And if he is smart and the people around him are smart, let him work his way back in. Let him be more a part of the team. He'll still put up numbers because he's that kind of good. But put the ball in Grayson Allen's hands, play that zone, and let's figure it out. And I am all in on Duke.
Yeah,
I'm all in on Carolina, too, by the way.
Yeah, Carolina's a pro. How about Carolina going the anti-Carolina lineup, getting a little bit of play out of those two freshman bigs? But Theo Pinson's been absolutely incredible. More or less actually almost a facilitator. Still scoring, rebounding, 8 rebounds a game, which is ridiculous. Getting Joel Berry, basically, again, in advanced passes in the open court. Berry's been more aggressive. And Luke May, you know, one time I said, can he play against length? Luke May is having, like, an ACC Player of the Year type season in a lot of ways.
If people really paid attention, and I saw this firsthand, but it was a while ago in New Orleans against Ohio State, I'm sitting there going, and I kept following it. Like, why isn't Luke May being considered as an All-American? I mean, his numbers are incredible at different times. And, look, I believe this, and I watched it for myself, and I know you did as well. When they beat Duke, all of a sudden something happened, man. And it may have happened before, which enabled them to beat Duke, but they became a more cohesive group. They became what I look at as a hungrier group. Look, you win national title, it's easy to get complacent. It's easy to think we can just turn it on. Well, they turned it on right before that, and it hasn't gone off. And I can't wait. I can't wait for the Syracuse game. I think it's going to be a fun game. I think that Duke has been great. I think that North Carolina is right there as a Final Four team, so they're both in my circle of trust because they just figured it out and let's go.
Yeah, I agree. And Cameron Johnson, you know, I didn't think he could rebound the ball the way he's rebounded the ball. Huge, obviously.
How big has he been?
He's been unbelievable. I'll tell you the other guy. I think in this five-game win streak, shot-making, Kenny Williams has been absolutely phenomenal. And when you add another guy who can shoot it, that opens up the court just a little bit more for a Pinson to drive it, for you know Joel Berry to make plays, to move Cameron Johnson into action, because he's bringing some big away from the basket. That's the thing. Luke Bay and Cameron Johnson bring some big away from the basket, and so they're spreading that court out behind that three-point line, which makes the game easier. And then they bring those two. They bring Brooks in, and they bring you know the other bigs in, and Manley, and you know what? It's an interesting lineup.
Hey,
I'm
going to
go ahead.
Last thing, how big is, like I always say this, Keith Smart in 1987 makes a shot, I get a ring. Keith Smart misses a shot, we don't get a ring. Shot making is massive, I'm telling you, and they got guys that can go make shots. So sleep on North Carolina at your own risk. I think they're really good.
All right, last one in the circle. But first, before we get to it, Kansas played Oklahoma yesterday, and Oklahoma once again like going south, 7 straight loss, I think 9 of the last 11. Trae Young had this to say after the game in another tough loss.
I'm getting guarded like nobody else in the country is being guarded, scouted on like no one else in the country is. So it's a mystery coming out each and every game, trying to figure out how a team's going to guard me and how I'm going to dictate and help my team win. So right now it's tough. I know no one likes losing, especially us.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big Trae Young fan, but I got to be honest, that was too whiny for me. Here's the deal. You're not playing in an AAU tournament in April or playing in a tournament in Vegas in July. I mean, this is the Big 12 with Hall of Fame coaches, and other teams have really good players. And you know what? I can tell you what you're expecting every day. You're going to get trapped on ball screens. You're going to get trapped on dribble handoffs. They're going to deny you the basketball. They're going to make someone else make a play. They're going to be physical on you. They're going to try to speed you up. That's just the way it is. And look, Trae Young, you know, things are, you're a terrific player. You're getting worn down by the round robin effect of the Big 12. But you're getting game planned for like every other best player on anyone else's team. Do you disagree with me on that?
No. No, I watch Kata Bates Diop every game. They do the same thing. They trap him on ball screens. They get on top of him. They don't let him get the ball. Different kind of player, but they force him and stay in front of him. No, I don't. Look, Seth. Here's what I do, man. I look over at that other bench and I say, all right, well, Self's making about $4 million a year. Assistant coach is making about $500,000 a piece. Guys on that bench, what's the scholarship worth? $40,000. A lot of money on that bench to figure out how to win a basketball game. And they've been doing it for longer than Trae Young's been alive. In fact, in some cases, they've been doing it longer than Trae Young's dad knew his mom. So that's college basketball. I really like Trae Young, and I don't know that that's whining. I don't, you know, I just know, here's what I think. I think that if we're going to highlight Trae Young like we have, then I think he has the right to come back and talk about himself relative to the entire nation. That sounds weird, I know.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Does that make sense?
You have a great line, getting lost in his team.
Yeah.
All right, and like to me, the thing, and I'm a big fan. I think the kid's been phenomenal, and I think it's hard on him. I think it's hard on Lon Kruger. I mean, like he's in that press conference, you almost want to put your arm around him and say, hey, you're putting too much pressure on yourself. You know, we just got to keep on getting better. Like here's the deal: Oklahoma guard someone. You got to guard. You're not guarding anyone,
right?
I mean, so like if you get some stops, then maybe the game will become easier. So I mean, I just think that. He needs to get lost at this point. You know, when things were going well, it was great. It was fun. It was exciting. So he needs help. He needs to get lost in his team. His teammates need to rally around each other. And it can't be, Trae's shooting this, Trae's shooting that. We're making that happen because, let's face it, it's a story. But, I'd like to see him be more lost in talking about his team because his team, like Brady Maddox, not shooting the ball very well. Lon Kruger made 8,000 changes in his lineup yesterday. I mean, they're trying to find a chemistry, but the chemistry is you got to put some dudes out there going to guard someone.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to me what the issue with him is.
Seth, that was absurd yesterday defensively. That was like, man, I don't know. I mean, okay, if you're not going to guard, then you got to be Loyola Marymount back in the 80s and just say this is what we're going to do. But if you're going to have any pride in defense as a part of it, hey, look, I know that you know, some nights you go into fog or you go into wherever. It doesn't matter. And you're going to get your brains beat out because they're going to make everything. And that's cool. I get it. But, man, wide open. No resistance. So, Trae Young, yes. Trae Young, no. Fine. But guard a little. Try a little.
So, the team they played, Kansas.
Ooh.
All right.
Circle of trust.
Circle of trust.
Uh-huh.
Udoka Azubuike stays on the court. I'll tell you, he made 7 of 10 free throws the other night, which was obviously used against West Virginia. He gets it on that left block and gets to the middle and shoots that little rolling hook. Is Devontae Graham or Keenan Evans? Devontae Graham, is he the national player of the year, the Big 12 player of the year? Or is it Jalen Brunson? Because it's definitely not, in this moment in time, Trae Young like we all thought it was. I think it's Jalen Brunson.
I'll tell you what.
Devontae Graham's really good, though.
Yeah, man. You know, I would have said no earlier. I would have said no chance earlier. But you know what's interesting, Seth? Is this wrong to think? Big possums walk late, Seth. That's what they do.
Whoa, run that by me again. This could be a legendary one.
Late.
Is that so?
Everybody can. Hey, look, it's easy. Easier, let's put it that way, early in the season. A lot of 3 o'clock hitters out there, but you know what? The lights come on at 7. These are the games. Like, we're going down the stretch in leagues now to play for championships. Big possums, who's walking late these days? And I think Devontae Graham, he's a big possum. He's walking late, man. He's playing his best basketball right now. And I think not only is he playing his best basketball, but he's leading. Guys are coming up to his level. I'm big on Brunson. I'm big on Bates Diop. I'm big on Devontae Graham. I hate that Trae Young has struggled like he has, but give me some of the hey, Big Possum.
You know, I gotta ask.
Yeah,
I gotta ask.
Yeah.
All right. Is this a D squaredism?
Yeah.
Is this a knightism?
No.
Is this your dad? I know your dad. No. You know, running a school. He had probably had some good lines, but
yeah.
I mean, Big Possum.
I don't know.
That's a new one.
I don't know, but I
might have to add it to my repertoire.
Yes.
I just want to make sure that I give the right person, you know, the credit.
Me. Just me. Me.
All right.
I don't know where it came from, but, you know, I do know big possums walk late, and I've been saying it since I was in high school.
Big possums walk late.
Big possums don't walk early. Now, you don't see possums around at noon, do you? Some of us that used to, not anymore, but used to hang out till 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Gene Katie's calling me now. I love Katie calls me once a week. It's the greatest.
He's the best.
We talked earlier in the day. He calls me. He calls me because he's
a
mad.
Big possum.
Oh, he's a huge possum. He may be the granddaddy of all possums. He'll walk early. He'll walk late. He's mad because Huggins only shot 2 free throws against 35 for Kansas. So he mad about that. But
what was your take on that?
My take on that was I don't think referees are supposed to count how many free throws guys shoot, but it did seem a little odd. I didn't see the game. I was doing a game.
Kansas shoots only 14% of their offense, one of the lowest in the country. I'm not an analytics guy. They get from the free throw line. Now, look, we know West Virginia also fouls a lot.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not saying anything that people had agendas going into the game and things of that nature. I did think it wasn't the strongest group, but that's just me, you know, talking. But 35-2 is something. Let me ask you this, because I'll answer for myself. If that happened to me, I would not have lasted as long as Hugs.
Oh,
it would have been ugly. It would have been an out-of-body experience.
Ooh.
How about you?
Oh, I got thrown out numerous times. I am this happy-go-lucky, gregarious guy in the media, but completely out of my mind, throwing things, wearing my clothes backwards, breaking stuff, swearing at athletic directors. It would have been utter and complete chaos, madness. I learned the Gatorade, you know, the water cooler punch from Rick Majerus. The Gatorade would have been flying. The tossing... the pacing, the screaming, the cussing, chaos. Chaos.
Yeah, I thought Hugs did a pretty good job hanging in there. And,
yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see just I talked with Hugs yesterday, and he's not a happy Hugs. Just not a happy Hugs right now.
All right, but I will say this. Quit fouling.
Yeah, really. Give me two sleeper teams.
Oh, two sleeper teams? I'll give you one that if they make the tournament, I'll give you Penn State. I will. You said it earlier. Now, I don't know that they can make the tournament. They can play Michigan. They got to beat Michigan. But I'll tell you this much. You said it. They got dudes that can go make plays. Lamar Stevens isn't playing great. I will give you them because they also have a couple bigs that are getting better and better and better. And they have a, I'm not sure, superstar. I'm not sure. I think Tony Carr is great at times. Maybe not. But I must give you Penn State. That's number one. I'm going to give you another one. I watched them the other day, and again, I'm not sure they're going to make the tournament. But they appear to me to be athletic enough to make a run, and that's USC. Now, I'm not going to give you MAC teams and all that.
Without Benny Boatwright, I like
that.
Yeah,
but I just think they got enough to win a game or two. Now, when you say sleeper team, I'm not predicting anybody outside of your circle of trust from getting to the Final Four other than Ohio State. But those two teams are sleepers to me. How about you?
I'm going to give you a go off the beaten path. I'm going to go with the Fighting Kermit Davises of Middle Tennessee. And I'm going to say that they're going to win at least one, maybe two games in the NCAA tournament. They guard. They're athletic. I'm giddy about Giddy. Giddy Potts is a big, big-time scorer. Nick King, who's been to about 400 schools.
Yes.
But now is a fifth-year guy, is playing at a high level. And the guy that's coaching him does an incredible job. So I'm going to give you one there. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you another one. And I'm not sure they're a sleeper team. We're going to be talking with Wichita State head coach Greg Marshall.
Yeah. But
all of a sudden, out of the blue, they'd struggled defending. They defended a little bit better against Cincinnati the other night. All of a sudden, this is a team that is really intriguing to me because, one, look, they don't have great toughness, but they have the potential to have great toughness. And, you know, look, Landry Shamet seems like he's healthy, making shots. Shaq Morris is a matchup nightmare. They've got depth. They have an upperclassman, Rashad Kelly, who rebounds and is physical and defends. Austin Reeves put into the starting lineup, knocks down shots. They're an interesting team right now. Going into Cincinnati, breaking that home win streak was really impressive. So, you know, I think Wichita State is one of those teams that, you know, we're not talking about enough and that has a chance to really do something special. So
you like Cincinnati? Are you like Houston?
Yeah, I do like Houston because I think they're getting more play out of different guys. Now, obviously, Rob Gray's really good. I think the kid who transferred from who had all the issues at Indiana is playing well.
Devin Davis. Yeah, he's a good player.
He's a good player, and they got one other kid who's playing pretty well. So I think they're pretty good. I think that's a Houston team that is, you know, you got to give them credit.
Nevada?
I really like Nevada. And, you know, we're going to be talking to Nevada head coach Eric Musselman in a second, and Nevada is really good. And I'll tell you, we want to talk about, you talk about a blueprint. You know, like here's a guy, that, you know, a lifer, a basketball lifer, CBA, CBL, assistant coach in the NBA, head coach in the NBA, a short time in college basketball, but a guy that absolutely has figured out how to put together a team, especially at a place like Nevada. He's a relentless recruiter. He's done a great job with transfers. Nevada's got big wing up players with the Martin twins. Jordan Caroline is absolutely a very tough matchup. They're good now. I'm just telling you, that team is for real.
Do you ever know his dad, Bill?
I you know what? I've been to his dad's clinics. Way back in the day when I was, you know, just a young whippersnapper. But I didn't know his dad. Well, you probably knew his dad because of the league.
Coach Knight and him were friends. We used to go to dinner once in a while when he was in Minnesota. And he is the epitome. His dad was the epitome, along with Tate's Lock, and Norm Ellenberger, of basketball crazy, best guys in the world to talk to. Division, because they had the best stories about recruiting and a variety of things, and they were completely intense and completely nuts and completely fun. And I loved his day. I loved when we would go to his place called Dinky Town, a little Italian village in Minneapolis, where we'd go to this pizza place with the great Sid Hartman and Bill Musselman, and Bud Grant used to be there. And I'd just sit there as a young guy and just like, wow, this is pretty cool. You know what I mean? I mean, great
and
stuff.
And I think Eric's like, Eric Musselman is a basketball junkie.
Yeah.
And like, he's got Caleb Martin, Jordan Caroline, Cody Martin. Those three guys are really good. He's got Kendall Stevens, who was at Purdue, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Kendall Stevens was a big-time recruit. His dad, Everett, was one of the Three Amigos at Purdue, and it didn't work out. He ran into some personal problems, both at home back in Illinois and on campus, and now he's done a great job. At 21 the other night, they beat Boise.
Yeah, and now they lost Larry Drew to an ACL. But when we come back, we're going to visit with the head basketball coach in Nevada, Eric Musselman, as well as Wichita State's own Coach Greg Marshall.
What a day!
I mean, doesn't get any better than that. Stick around.
I love sports. I just wish they could be with me always. They say you don't choose the app. The app chooses you. It is everything I could ever want in a sports companion. It can stream the games and shows that I love, and it's there whenever I need it. I never thought I could find an app that loves sports as much as I do. Until now.
Download the ESPN app to stream ESPN Radio and all the ESPN networks now.
We'd like to welcome in Eric Musselman, the head basketball coach at Nevada. And Eric, thanks for being with us. I know this will be probably the most painful 10, 15 minutes of your life. But hang in there with us, because it's just two fired coaches talking ball, and we've all been fired. So, I mean, it's something we all have in common.
There's no doubt about that, and thanks for having me on, Seth and Dan.
Hey, you were a career coach. You're a lifer. I mean, it's in your blood. You grew up with it. Most of your background was obviously in professional basketball, whether it was the NBA to CBA or any other BA that's been invented. The transition, though, to college basketball seems like it's been seamless. How have you been able to do that from your NBA background, professional background, just seamlessly transition to this crazy game of college basketball?
I think the biggest thing, Seth, is just the fact that I had patience. And so I did, when I was let go by the Sacramento Kings, I did 3 years of television work doing local college games, went to shoot-arounds, obviously, to prep for those games that I was doing with the media, spoke to college teams when they came in. For instance, if Vanderbilt came in to play St. Mary's, I spoke to their team. So I was around it for 3 years as a media guy, studying, hung out at St. Mary's a ton because it's close to my Bay Area home, hung out at Cal, and went to a lot of different practices. And then I had to make kind of a career choice. I went to the D League and had a good year with the Reno team, and then went and did the Lakers D League team, and decided to go be a college assistant coach at Arizona State, 2 years with Herb Sendek. As an assistant, and then got offered a job at Louisiana State with Johnny Jones and with the Timberwolves with Flip Saunders. And we had a lot of family meetings. I didn't know Flip had played for my dad, and my dad was the first coach of the T-Wolves, and so it was a really, really tough decision because I didn't know anything about Baton Rouge. I did not know Coach Jones at all. And when we made that leap of faith to go be an assistant again and to do it in the SEC and in a part of the country that I had not been, lived in, so to speak, or recruited in. So I really think, the key was the 6 years of preparation. I know certainly for myself, if I would have gotten a job straight from the pro ranks, I would have failed miserably. But to be able to sit back for 6 years, three as an assistant, and really study the landscape of college basketball. And then during those 6 years, being able to formulate a plan of how I wanted to go, if in fact I would ever get a chance to be a head coach at the collegiate level. So I would say the key was really just patience, and it wasn't easy going from an NBA head coach to a college assistant. To my knowledge, it's never been done at all by any former NBA head coach, but it certainly helped prepare me. And without the 3 years as an assistant, I would have been, like I said, a miserable failure.
I'll tell you the interesting thing is the way you've put together your team. I mean, like, you've put together your team in a lot of ways, like CBA or NBA GM. I mean, you've done a great job with transfers. You've done a great job with player development. You've also recruited some high school kids. But it seems like your ability to connect with kids and put your roster together in a way where you've been able to stay old, you've been able to have some continuity, and you've been extremely competitive. What was your game plan in, like, putting together these rosters that you've been able to put together at Nevada that are as good as, you know, quite honestly, this year, you're a top 20 team, a team that we just talked about. You're a team that can make a run in the NCAA tournament.
Well, the first thing, you know, when we got the job, it was coming off 9 wins, 7 Division I wins. And so the game plan was, how can we win as many games as possible in years 1 and 2, but also build where years 3 and 4 are two key years for us. And so when we looked at the roster, you know, the first year we felt like we had to get at least 2 freshmen that would be impact freshmen. And so we got Lindsey Drew, who was a former Arizona State commit, and then Cameron Oliver, who was a former Oregon State commit. And so those two guys, we had a decision to make, because that first year we had a lot of seniors. And the decision was, we were going to play those two kids basically from the beginning of the year. They would get 25-plus starts. And by the end of the year, come conference tournament play, we thought, because of those two freshmen's unique ability as players, that they would grow and be able to really help us in the conference tournament. And that then that happened. We could not get any other impact players because we got the job late. Because, you know, just as any first-year guy, it's hard to get your first high school recruiting class. And so we decided to go and get the 4 best players that we possibly could. And we landed Marcus Marshall and Jordan Caroline. And those guys have been a big part of what we did in year two. And then the following year, we got 2 high school kids in DeVerl Ramsey and Josh Hall. DeVerl has since transferred because of a lack of minutes in year two, but both guys were 4-star high school players. And then we brought in 4 other sit-out guys. And then this year, again, we have 4 guys sitting out. We think those 4 will be big-time impact players for us. And really, what we did is, in our recruiting room, we actually call it a draft room, re-rank players based on, are they a lottery pick type player, meaning high impact? Are they role players, or are they just guys that fill out your roster? And the one thing, having observed the college landscape, I felt that the biggest mistake of a college coach was putting a player on scholarship who could not be a rotation player. And we all make mistakes, but I felt you had to do everything you can to eliminate 2 or 3 scholarships being used on somebody that was never going to be able to have an impact on your program. And it's been hard because we haven't had much depth for 3 straight years now. But I also felt like, coming from the NBA, that the depth in college basketball is over, you know, talked about, because NBA games 48 minutes, college is 40, you know, 2 games a week as opposed to potentially 4 games a week. And then obviously the 82-game schedule compared to a 30-game schedule. So, you know, we built it where we think next year we can be even better. And we spend a ton of time on trying to get the guys that we have in our program better in the off season.
Hey, Coach, couple things. Number one, you got twins, right? The Martins are twins. Has that been difficult? I mean, is that when one's mad, the other's mad? When one's great, the other? I mean, how does that work?
Well, it was hard for the first 8 months to just distinguish them unless they were
right
on the court, because they have 2 different games. But like 2 weeks ago, they came in and they both changed their look on their hair, and it was both identical. So these 2 guys, their beard, everything about them is identical, although when you're around them, they do have 2 distinct personalities. I think that it could be very challenging, not just to have twins, but to have, you know, just even if you had brothers or siblings on the team. And but the one thing with Cody and Caleb Martin is the number one quality that they have is competitiveness. They hate to lose. They have an unbelievable will to win. They have great toughness. And therefore, because of those qualities, their teammates have immense, immense respect for them. And it is challenging because both guys are great players and have a high impact on our team. But they're both unselfish as well. And so that's really what made it work. And they're great students. And their mom's done an incredible job raising them. And so it really what would look on the outside like it would be difficult. And even the other night we were playing a zone and Caleb couldn't get going and he wanted to change our zone offense. And Cody looked at him and said, "Will you shut up and listen to Coach?" And so these two guys go back and forth, but it's always in the best interest of the team.
Coach, the other thing, and I you're talking to two basketball gurus here, so I'm going to correct you. I'm going to say that Tate Slock was the head coach of the Buffalo Braves and then worked with me as an assistant at Indiana. So there you go.
You got me, Dan. I love it.
Yeah. We're gurus here.
We're all gurus. Yeah. We might even be journalists someday in our lives.
I've been searching for that for, I don't know, 6 years or so, and you just
killed it.
Bam, you punch me in the mouth.
Yeah. Seth and I live by, do as we say, not as we actually do. So we,
exactly.
We're information guys now. We're the Schefter and Mort of college hoops, man. Hey, but I do want to get back to something because I was telling Seth before, I used to have a great dinner when I was with Coach Knight in Minneapolis. Your dad would be there. Bud Grant would be there. Sid Hartman would be there. Obviously, Coach Knight, our staff, and it was fantastic. People don't know what a great basketball coach Bill Musselman, your father, was. He was tough, man. He was like crazy tough. Do you have a little bit of that in you? Do you fight that? Because obviously it's changed since the 70s and 80s. How do you go about dealing with heredity?
Well, my father was not soft, that's for sure. But his number one quality really was competitiveness and will to win and never accepting losing. And so that's how I was raised. Anything that my dad and I did was always a competition, not just athletically. When the old Pac-Man machine, we'd go into a restaurant, and if I beat him, we couldn't leave until he beat me. And so, but I feel fortunate that I was raised understanding that life is winning and losing. But having said that, I have an unbelievable mom. And I spent most of my time being raised in San Diego, which is a little bit laid back. I love the beach, so I think I have some of my dad's qualities, but I certainly have some of my mom's as well. And I think the biggest thing in coaching or leadership is you do have to evolve with time. And, I've been a part of teams. When you get on a team bus, nobody talks. Or when you go to a team meal, nobody talks. That certainly is not the case with our team. Our team meals, and for some of our new staff members, sometimes they're like, really? Like, I mean, everybody's laughing, talking, because I don't think 4 hours before a game has any impact on if you play well or play poorly. And again, that was not how I used to do things, but I do think you have to evolve. And today's athletes are different than they were 20 years ago. I mean, 20 years ago or even longer, like when I was in college at University of San Diego, nobody transferred. I mean, if you transferred, then there was some alarm going off that something was wrong with either the program or the player who was leaving. And now transfers are part of life. I mean, it happens all the time in every sport and every conference. And so I do think that our world has changed. And as a head coach, you've got to change and evolve as well.
I think the biggest change, there's two factors in my man Muss. Factor number one is the leadership of Danielle Musselman, who basically is the kinder, gentler Musselman, who kind of keeps the whole thing together, and then spending some time in Venezuela with the Zen master, Brad Greenberg, which everything's going to be fine, Mus. Don't worry about it. Why are you freaking out? Everything's good. Don't worry about it. We're fine. So, I mean, he's had these settling influences in his life.
So Brad Greenberg, every Friday morning, would at breakfast, would say, "All right, Mus, look, you're not going to get paid for sure. They're not going to pay you on time. You got to take a deep breath and relax." And so I had a little meditation session with him every payday, and he was right as usual. And then obviously my wife, I'll come home. We lost the other night to UNLV, and I stayed in my office a little bit later than normal, came back, fell asleep on the couch in the middle of the night. My wife comes out, and she goes, "Would you grow up?" So she put it in perspective really quick.
It's true. I mean, you know, I get a kick out of guys who sleep. I said, "Well, I slept in my office." Why would you sleep in your office? You're not going to get a good night's sleep. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Like, you wake up tomorrow morning, that tape's still going to be there, and you're going to be more rested, and life is going to be good. But I'll tell you one thing, Mus, you've done an incredible job, and, you know, I really believe your team is positioned the way you attack offensively, the way you make shots, the versatility, the size of your wings. You know, you guys are in position to do something special and make a run in the tournament. We appreciate you hanging out with the two fired coaches because we like to have, you know, company of people that can see the game through our prism and our perspective.
Hey, save a seat for me because, as you all know, it happens to everybody, and it happens quick.
Well, hey, good luck in the tournament. We'll speak to you soon. Thanks,
bud. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Seth. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
We'd like to thank Eric Musselman for joining us. And now, maybe the head coach of one of the hottest teams in America, a team that can make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. Got to try to figure out how he's figured his team out and got him to play a little bit angry. Wichita State head coach Greg Marshall. Coach Marshall, what is going on?
Man, I'm just relaxing here today. Got a big preparation day for Tulane tomorrow, but last couple of days we've been really nice here in Shocker Nation.
Have you been a kinder, gentler you the last few days?
Yeah, we actually had to take yesterday off. We've got a schedule that 2 days to prepare for Tulane and 2 days to prepare for SMU this weekend, having played Sunday in Cincinnati. So, you know, the way the rules are, you have to take one of those days off. So we elected to take yesterday off after the travel back Sunday night and let the guys recuperate. Hopefully they'll be ready to go and prepare for Mike Dunleavy's Green Wave coming in here.
What's the biggest difference in your team? That was a heck of a game at Cincinnati, breaking their home win streak. It was just a high-level game. And, you know, as I watched your team this year, I didn't know if they had that play-angry mentality. But watching that game the other day, watching Shaq Morris fly around and watching Landry attack and watching Austin Reeves, who was put into the starting lineup, what's been the difference in this team the last, say, 2.5 weeks?
Well, I think that's we're a different group. I mean, you don't see Tekel Cotton or Ron Baker or Fred VanVleet out on that on the in post the guard area. So we don't have quite the athleticism and physicality that those guys had out front for our defense. So that's kind of been the deal. We've had to go back to more gap support in our man-to-man, maybe ball line, pack line, whatever, as opposed to denial, because our guards weren't, you know, keeping the ball in front like we wanted. But we've gotten that straightened out a little bit. We're more gap support, and they've been tough. I mean, if you saw us early in the year in Maui, if you saw us at Oklahoma State or at Baylor, where we were able to get wins, I mean, we've been tough, but it just, we had a little lull there, and Houston, who we had beaten very badly at our place in the very first American Athletic Conference game in Koch Arena, was laying in wait, and they kind of exposed us there. But they've exposed a lot of people in Houston this year. Kelvin Sampson's got a great club, and we went down there, and they kind of punked us a little bit, and that was the one that had me a little worried. But we've righted the ship. And guys are playing really, really hard. They're sharing the basketball. I mean, we shot 53% against Cincinnati's defense, which is very rare for a team to go, especially into Cincinnati, and take care of the ball and get good looks against their tenacious pressure.
Was McDuffie coming back? Did that change things a little bit for a little bit? But you're still 21-5. I mean, isn't it amazing you're supposed to win every game now at Wichita State?
It's amazing, Dan, and that's the deal. It's just, you know, with the schedule that we put together,
right,
we got Trey Young when he was, you know, showing his skills to America, and I had a bad game plan. That chalked that one up to me. We gave the game away in the championship game against Notre Dame. We had a bad press break. We missed the front end of a 1-1 all in the last 20 seconds. So, but give Matt Farrell and the Fighting Irish credit. I mean, they made the plays that they had to make to win that game in crunch time. But, you know, we played probably the most difficult non-conference schedule in the country, definitely the hardest that I've ever played. And then you go step up a weight class in this American Athletic Conference, where if you play poorly or even average against most of these teams, you're going to lose. And that happens from time to time. We're not in a league where we can go 17-1 or 18-0 in the conference anymore. And, you know, we lost two games in the non-conference against very good teams that have hit their struggles since then. I mean, Oklahoma now is, people have figured out whatever going on with Oklahoma. They hit a little skid. And then we played Notre Dame when they had Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell. So they were at full strength. And you know what a Mike Brait coach team can do when they're at full strength. But I don't know. I just think expectations are a little bit out of whack early. And that's okay. I mean, I'd rather people talk about us being a really, really good team and this is what we're capable of doing, as opposed to, you know, they're not very good, they're not going to win, it's just not going to happen. So we've understood that, the expectations, what they are, but it's amazing. College basketball, man, if you don't, especially this year with the parity, if you don't play really well, you can lose just about any night because there's so many good teams and it's so even. But I like where my team is. I really do.
Speaking of that, you know, you guys play really hard. You pick up your guard, you play, you know, for 40 minutes. How much are you now balancing rest, rust, getting better, getting healthy, getting, you know, how difficult is that, or how easy is it for you and your staff to balance this?
Well, it is. I mean, that was a very physical game. If you saw the game at Cincinnati,
great game.
That was a war. That was one of those, you know, that you just go, man, I'm tired as a coach. I know the players have got to be tired and a little dinged up because it was physical. There were times when, you know, it looked like a rugby scrum on the floor for loose balls and rebounds. And, you know, there were some scrapes and cuts, and Shaq Morris gets a ding in his face. And there were other players on both sides that were have to be banged up. So yesterday being a day off was I hope, the smart call. And it's the first time we played Tulane. It's kind of an odd deal. First time we'd played Cincinnati was Sunday. And now we play them again on the last weekend before the tournament. And then the first time we played Tulane is this coming Wednesday night. But we've got the scouting report in the can. Now just we've got to get it to the guys and have a great practice today. And for 36 hours, you'll be focused on the green wave.
How different is it when you change leagues? I mean, how different is your routine? How different is it not, you know, when you play against teams every year, you got to have understanding of who they are, how they win, what you're going to give, what you're going to take away. How different has that learning curve been? Where you're going to stay at a hotel, you know, when you're going to travel, how long it takes to get to the arena, all those things are new. Has that been an adjustment?
You know, that hasn't been an adjustment because I've got a great director of basketball operations in Dominic O'Cone. He takes care of all the logistics. The hotels have been awesome. The cities have been great. That's not the issue. The issue is it's a 12-team league, so we've had to do 11 brand-new scouting reports, new coaches, new schemes, new players, while the other teams in the league have had to just do one new scouting report on Wichita State. So it has been a little bit more difficult, but it's challenging. I mean, it's refreshing, to be honest, Coach. For me, having spent 10 years in the Missouri Valley Conference, we were ready for this move. We were excited about this move, and we wanted to make this move. So it's been good. And I think it's been a win-win. You know, in business, like college basketball is a business, we know that. But in business, when you can have a win-win, it's good for the league and it's good for Wichita State, then that's a deal you got to make. And I think this is a win-win.
Marcus McDuffie, where do you think he's at in terms of where you want him? Because, you know, to me, his versatility, his athleticism, you know, he's a unique talent. You have a different team, but you surely need as good as Shaq is playing, but you still need his athleticism and his versatility. Where do you think he's at in terms of just being back to being instinctive?
You know, I'm really glad you asked that question because he probably played his best half of basketball and possibly his best overall game against Cincinnati. He missed 11 games, so he's been back for 14 games. But as you know, and you guys have both probably been in this situation with either injuries or guys that become eligible at Christmas as mid-year transfers, and you've got a rotation and you've got everybody's kind of got a role established after 11 games, and then you add a piece like Marcus McDuffie, I will tell you that it has been difficult. But not because Marcus is, I mean, he's a tremendous player. You said it. He's a dynamic talent. But first of all, he wasn't 100% when he got back. You know, he was cleared by the doctors, but basketball shape and being ready to go for, you know, 15, 20 minutes a night at top speed and 100% efficiency and effectiveness, he was not there. So the first couple of games, there was a lot of just getting him in shape. And then the guy wants to get back those 11 games that he missed in one night. And he was forcing things, and things just weren't coming as easily for him as they had. And then we're in the meat of a trumped up conference schedule with the American Athletic Conference. And it was just difficult for him, but he's starting to take a deep breath now. He was really good on the defensive end. He hit a nice pull up jumper. He hit a beautiful three. I thought he went to the basket very aggressively and got a really tough bang bang charge call in the first half. But I loved the Marcus McDuffie that I saw against Cincinnati, and hopefully we'll get that going forward.
Well, Greg, we absolutely love your team and how your team plays, and the job you've done there is incredible, and we're excited to watch you guys not only in the American tournament, but making another deep run in the NCAA tournament. You do such a great job with your team, and we appreciate you taking time on a kind of an off day to hang out with on the world's greatest podcast, but, you know, two fired coaches.
Thanks,
I'll tell you
Greg.
What, man. Two of my favorites.
Thanks,
appreciate
boss.
You guys. I'll be on with you guys anytime. Love what you do and what you represent. So we'll keep battling. Hopefully we can stay healthy, and I do think we've got a chance to win a few games in that tournament. Who knows?
Sounds great.
Can't wait.
Thanks, man.
Take care, guys.
D squared. Yep. I'll tell you, Eric Musselman, Greg Marshall. But now it's time for us to make some picks. Gabe, what do you got for us, man?
All right, first matchup of the week for you guys to pick, Sonic Blockbuster, Louisville Duke on ESPN and ESPN Radio tomorrow. Who you got?
Go ahead, D-Squared.
I got Duke by 627 points, particularly if Marvin Bagley doesn't play. That's my pick. And I've got Grayson Allen going to the line a minimum of 8, a maximum of 20 times in the game. He's going to abuse them.
Yeah, For a while there, I had Louisville as a sleeper team. I like Dangadel. I like their rim protection. I think Quentin Snyder is good. They don't have that hard outer shell that they've had in the past, that resiliency, that toughness
right.
when they got to make a play. So I've got to agree with you. I think that, you know, Duke, I think Gary Trent Jr., by the way,
mm-hmm.
every time he shoots it, you think it's going in.
Yes, sir.
So the ball's moving a little bit better. I like Duval off the ball. I like Duke.
All right, next one, Saturday, big matchup down in Lubbock, Texas, Kansas, Texas Tech. Who you guys have?
Go ahead, Seth.
You know, we're going to be down there. So, I can't pick that game because I got to wait for the big reveal for that game. I mean, you know, Jay will pop in the jersey and everything, but I can just say this. I'm sticking with the field.
Really?
I know I shouldn't be because Keenan Evans, if he doesn't get hurt against Baylor, I think that, you know what, we still got a one game lead. I know Kansas is playing well, but I mean, like, I'm not a waffle guy. You know what I mean, Dan? Like, when I say something, I'm sticking with it. You know, if the field gets a, you know, the field's got to beat Oklahoma State. If they can beat Oklahoma State, then all of a sudden that game really gets interesting. Because they beat Oklahoma State, the winner of that game looks like,
Well, I know this. If the dog didn't stop to take a dump, he'd have caught the rabbit. So there's your if on Keenan Evans.
Any possums?
Give me Kansas all day. Tough environment, going to be crazy. I get all that, but you know what? In my world, that's why you go to Kansas. You don't go to Kansas to play in front of a half-filled gym. You go to Kansas to play this game. in front of you and the rest. And I like Kansas. I like Kansas to win this game going away a little bit at the end. Close, nip and tuck. Next thing you know, it becomes a six-point game.
No game day pop. You know, every once in a while, it's a game day pop now.
Yes. But Kansas, you know what? You're supposed to play those games. Look, if you don't want to play those games, go to Kansas State.
Bruce Weber's going to be an NCAA tournament team, too.
I know.
He's done a heck of a job.
He's done a great job. He's one of my favorite coaches.
All right, last one. Little matchup down in the Pac-12 on Sunday. Arizona, Oregon. Who you got?
I've got Arizona winning by 726. And I'll look, what have we learned, Seth? We've learned that whatever we said at the beginning of the year is starting to come true. Michigan State back in business. I think Arizona, after obviously a terrible start, back in business. Oregon, to me, eh. I haven't liked them all year, going back to when I saw Trae Young give them 40-some. Not going to be easy, but you know what? At the end of the day, I think they take it out. You guys, everybody loves Ayton. If you're going to be a big-time guy, now's when to play. I think they're back in business. I know that Sean Miller isn't in love with his team, but that's fine. Coaches aren't supposed to be in love with their team right now. They just have too much talent, and I think eventually water finds its level, and you're going to see Arizona play great.
Yeah, I think so. You know, my only concern for Arizona is, you know, point guard play, consistency in the point guard play. They're defending better. Ayton is an absolute beast. Has got to be in the conversation for player of the year. People need to stay up and watch that guy. He's absolutely ridiculous. He's got a little Sean Kemp in him. Ooh. To me, which, you know, if you're listening, you probably say, Sean who? But Sean Kemp was an absolute beast. And I think that Sean Miller's figured his team out, and he's got him to respond to him. So I'm with you. Now, where you go this week, big boy?
I am tonight, as a dad, walking for senior night.
How cool is that?
Yeah, oh, my gosh.
I'll
say this. There's never been a father more proud of his son ever to walk and senior night. I am so proud of my son. Then I head tomorrow early. I got North Carolina at the Cuse. Our bosses have been nice enough to let me switch games with Franny Frischel, and a public thank you to Fran Frischel for changing games with me. Then Friday, I'm just as a dad going to go down to Bloomington. Then Saturday, noon, Michigan at Maryland. I got a busy week, and I can't wait. Where are you?
Well, I've got a busy week. I'm actually rolling into Knoxville to do the Knoxville tip-off, and then Florida, Tennessee. Which is a good thing, good game. Both teams need a win badly. And then I've got Cincinnati, UConn. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati lost two in a row, went to Wichita State to our good friend Greg Marshall. And UConn, who's actually playing better over the last five games, they're shooting it, they're scoring it a little bit better. Christian Vidal's been really good for them. Jalen Adams is starting to score. The big three, as I call them, not the Celtics' big three, but Larrier and Adams and Vidal have been pretty good. So that could be an interesting game, and we know that after two losses – it hasn't exactly been a kinder, gentler Mick Cronin. So it'll be an interesting week. Then off to Lubbock. Hang out with Coach Beard, one of our favorites, and see if they can, kind of make some hay in the Big 12. That game will be absolutely huge.
Will there be a surprise guest, Bob Knight, in that mix?
I would think that maybe we might have dinner with Coach Knight, and Bill will pay for it, so it'll be really good.
Well, good for you guys. That'll be interesting. Never mind. I'm going to shut up on that.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Kinder, gentler than nice.
Yes, yes, yes.
My guy, never disappoints. All right, man, look forward to this week. Enjoy senior night, man. That is absolutely awesome. Tell Junior we are proud of him, and we did our obligatory Junior mention multiple times on this show today.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.